Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
Don't sweat the technique.
You're locked in with the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
Let's go straight out to the HRMP guest line, being joined by the voice of the Astros, Todd Callis. Our conversation is presented by Texas Star Grill Shop and Gulf Coast Chevy, Buick, GMC, and Angleton. Start shopping for your new vehicle at LanceZCars.com. TK, thanks for taking a few minutes on what is a busy day, of course. Astros starting a three-game series tonight in Detroit. Where would the Astros be without Ronel Blanco?
7-23. That's their record without him, and they're 6-1 on the games he starts. So, yeah, and they should have won the seventh game. It was the game they had the lead late in D.C. and gave it up in the ninth inning. So, yeah, they could easily be 7-0 with Ronel on the mound and 7-23 with everybody else on the mound. He has been a blessing. He has been a savior. The number five starter has been their most consistent performer and given them length as a starter. So, yeah. It hasn't been a good year, but Ronel Blanco has been a shining star in the rotation for sure.
Well, let's keep the positives going, TK, coming off a win. What about the John Singleton resurrection? The fact that we were looking at first base, getting zero production from either guy. There were people pointing fingers and asking questions about both guys. Abreu goes down. Singleton gets more consistent at bats. Who could have seen this coming? But, boy, was it a right place, right time, and much-needed addition, John Singleton's bat to this lineup.
Yeah, you're right. I mean, it's a great story. In fact, Julie, I think, is working on that story right now. She talked to AJ Hinch about John because AJ saw John in the early part of his career. But who would have thought a guy who was basically, you know, out of baseball for 3 years, you don't see guys come back after a year or two away. For to be out of baseball for 3 years, go back to the Mexican League, work his way back, believe in himself, obviously his family is a big part of the reason why he's back here, because they stuck with him in his journey back to the big leagues. But it's not easy to basically start from scratch after being out of the game and out of affiliated ball. So for him to get a chance to play on an everyday basis now since Abreu's gone to West Palm Beach, he's taking full advantage of it. If he would have struggled that first 4 or 5 days, you might have seen a Lopresito or Dubon or somebody get a shot at first base. But John has basically not allowed that. He said, here I am. I'm going to make my presence felt, and he's done a great job. You know, that pick in the ninth inning yesterday, very underrated. Hader throws that fastball to catcher that sometimes doesn't get picked clean. For John to pick that one clean in a one-run game in the ninth inning was not quite as big as a home run, but certainly a valuable play.
Todd Callis joining us on the HRNP guest line. And looks, I mean, he's going to get a run of play there over, you know, as well. Like when they sent down Abreu to West Palm Beach and Abreu, you know, put the ego aside, all of that. And the thought was at the time, okay, Singleton's going to get a chance, but Lopresito might get a chance. Dubon played first base for an inning, actually. You know, you have Cabbage that's currently on this roster, and Singleton just flat out took over that job. I mean, he's won the job outright, it seems.
Yeah, I was interested to see who Joe was going to play over first base against Carlos Rodon, because Rodon could be so good with that slider against lefties. And when he started John against Rodon, I thought, well, maybe, you know, he's just going to play him out here until as long as he keeps hitting. And so he keeps hitting, mentioned his defensive play. But, yeah, he has pretty much become the everyday first baseman here for the last week and a half.
On the other side of that, TK, we know that Abreu did the team a solid, and they did him a solid, and everything's working on it. We've talked about it on the show. Is there any scenario where he doesn't get another look and gets called back up where he's going to get another chance?
I don't know. I guess that's possible. I still think we're in the nascent stages of how this is all playing out, and I think right now the reports we're getting is that he's doing his work and getting his swing down and trying to work his way back, but I think we're still early in this whole process to try and figure out exactly how the plays out and what the final scenario is with Jose Abreu. So, yeah, the reports we get are good, but I don't know if that's a scenario we'll see, but I don't think it's 100% out of the equation either.
How about Josh Hader being a guy that goes more than just an inning? Like the entire narrative was that he doesn't take the ball, et cetera, et cetera. This is the second time in, 10 days or so that Josh Hader's went more than three outs. He went two innings in the extra inning game, a four-out save yesterday. It seems like Hader's a gamer with the Astros.
Yeah, it's amazing, right? You sign a five-year deal, you have a little security, and all of a sudden the rules change a little bit. But, yeah, I don't think, Hader has said in the past, it wasn't something that he was completely opposed to, especially if it meant getting into the postseason or while they were in the postseason. He just didn't want to do it on a regular basis. And I don't think it's Joe Espada's play to have him pitch multiple innings on a regular basis. It's just been one of those scenarios in both cases where he felt like he had no other option. Ryan Pressly has been, dealing with a little bit of a sore lower back, so he hasn't always been available in the past week or so. So he wanted to make sure Hader was going to get that four-out save. That was an imperative game for the Astros to win, not just because they had the lead early, but those were the games that they were losing at points during the season where they had the lead in the sixth, the seventh, the eighth. They couldn't afford to let the Yankees sweep them for the entire season series and give up that game. So desperate times deserve desperate measures, and I don't think you're going to see Joe do that very often, but I've been surprised to see him do it twice already, and it is cool that Josh has been amenable to both times.
Okay, so on that school of thought, TK, when you talk about those three guys in the back of the bullpen, we just got done talking about this. We know that Pressly has struggled, but all three guys have struggled. We know the Astros are a very forward-thinking, analytical-type team. Could you ever see a scenario where even if Hader is the guy that's going to be the save guy at the very back of the bullpen, where based on matchups, where they are in the lineup and what side of the plate they hit on, it could be interchangeable between Abreu and Pressly, maybe even others, but at least particularly with those two guys?
I thought yesterday was the scenario where if they were going to flip the script, they could have and use Hader with Soto, Judge, and then Verdugo because they're two lefties, and then Judge has great numbers against Pressly. So I thought if that scenario was going to play out, it might have been yesterday, but Joe just didn't feel comfortable doing it that way. He might have in a normal, in a different time, if Pressly was 100% healthy and he knew Pressly had pitched his normal routine the last few days. But because Press hadn't pitched in 6 days and because he's been dealing with that, a little bit of that sore back, he didn't want to put the pressure on Pressly for the ninth inning, even if it was a more advantageous spot in the lineup in the ninth inning than the eighth inning for Ryan. So to answer your question, could it happen later on in the year? Absolutely. But I think that's the reason why it didn't happen yesterday.
Todd Kalas, our guest on the HRNP guest line. Todd, you've seen over the years when Yordan Alvarez gets hot, how much he can carry a team. And he's been reeling a little bit, certainly not the Yordan that we've come to expect. Yesterday we saw a glimpse of old Yordan, the home run in the first, the double later that sparked another run. You've seen it firsthand. When he gets hot, how does he carry a team?
It's just It just kind of makes everybody around him better. So all of a sudden, Yordan has a lot of aspects to his game that are underrated. His base running's underrated. His fielding's underrated. Obviously, his power can't be underrated because he hits the ball as far as anybody on the planet. Maybe not other than Judge and Stan, who are the StatCast darlings, but he's right there with them. So he just makes everybody better based on the fact that he can give you a great at bat. He can draw a walk. He can run the base as well. He can drive in runs. He can hit the ball 425 feet or 475 feet when he connects. Jeff Bagwell said it on one of our earlier broadcasts that he is the best overall hitter in Astros history. He said Altuve is probably a better average hitter, but in terms of the best overall hitter in Astros history, Jeff Bagwell wasn't too shabby himself and saw Greg Biggio hit alongside him for all those years, said Yordan's the best. So, I think the numbers are staggering. I don't have them in front of me, but I want to say his slugging percentage when they win games is close to 800, and his slugging percentage when they lose games is under 300. And it sounds like, you don't want to put everything on Yordan, but it's close to, as Yordan goes, so goes this offense. He's such an integral part of the middle of that lineup.
TK, I heard you guys when you were talking about that, and it was a kind of an eye-dropping, eye-opening stat to go, wow, he's been – we knew he's been impactful, but that impactful is crazy. On the flip side, when we heard Joey Loperfido was coming up, we heard he was coming up not to sit the bench. He was coming up to play. He sits two out of three games against the Yankees. He's sitting tonight with a lefty tomorrow. He may not hit tomorrow. Has it surprised you that he hasn't seen the field more since they called him up? Because he's had some success.
A little bit. You're right. I was a little surprised that he hasn't been in there on a more regular basis, but they're still trying to figure out a way to get this lineup in sync and get the best out of the lineup. So, to answer your question, I'm a little bit surprised because when he was called up, he was leading all of minor league baseball and home runs, and he's still leading the AAA level. I'm not sure about all of minor league baseball, but he's still the AAA leader in the International League and Pacific League at home runs, even though he hasn't been there in a couple weeks. But I thought he would be playing on a more regular basis, but they're trying to work everybody in there. They're trying to get Dubon his starts. They're trying to get Jake Myers his starts, Trey Cabbage his starts. So there's a lot of choices in the outfield, and they've been using Yordan primarily as a DH lately, but he likes to play in the outfield too when he gets a chance. So, yeah, it's a crowded outfield situation, and when Trey Cabbage came up, maybe that took a little bit of the everyday playing time away from Joey Loperfido. But we'll see how it plays out in the next week or so, because there's a lot of games in a lot of days in a short amount of time. They're in a span of 29 games in 30 days. So if he doesn't play on a regular basis, he'll still get a share of ABs.
And to that point, the 29 games in 30 days, Todd Kalish joining us on the HRNP guest line. How do you think that they shape it up with the rotation? You know, we've kind of heard thoughts of a six-man, but Brown has struggled. Eric Geddy has struggled. They're getting Javier back tomorrow. Have you heard anything else on how they're going to try to attack this stretch from a starting pitching perspective?
Yeah, I think they are going to try and look to a six-man rotation at some point. I mean, Verlander pitched on the first game of this road trip, as he's going to get the last game of this road trip. So he'll go in part of the regular five-man rotation. But beyond that, when they head back home, you may start to see them work into a six-man. Hunter Brown and Spencer Arrighetti obviously can fill in the other two spots. In addition to the guys who are pitching this weekend, Fromber and JB, with Ronel Blanco going yesterday, and then Christian Javier coming back, those would be your six for now. And then Urquidy's probably a couple of rehab starts away from rejoining the rotation beyond that. So at that point, you might have a decision. But a lot of those things played themselves out. But I do think you're going to see the Astros go to some sort of five-and-a-half to six-man rotation, if you will, once they get back home after this road trip.
TK, obviously it's a topic of conversation every day because of the team struggles early, and we know the numbers don't go in their favor. But they're literally only seven games out in the loss column of getting back in the division. As bad as it's been, is it wrong for me to still have some optimism this team is going to get back into it because of the injuries and getting healthy and seeing some of these guys, especially at first base, like with Singleton, finding their stroke?
No, I think if you just look at it and take all the emotion out of it of being an Astros fan or somebody watching the Astros on an everyday basis, when you take all the emotion out of it, you see on Fangraphs that they're like, I don't know, 35 to 36% chance of making the playoffs right now. Is that where they wanted to be on opening day? Absolutely not. But it's much better than a lot of people are giving credit for here after a 13-24 start. So, yeah, it's absolutely possible for them to get back in this. We're not even at the quarterway point of the season yet. They can't. But what they can't do now, because of this start, they can't have another 20 or 30-game stretch where they play poorly. They can't afford to have another stretch this year where they play subpar baseball like they have in the first 37 games. So they've taken that part out of the equation. There's no buffer zone for them, but can they play well enough to get back in this thing and make it to the playoffs? Absolutely, and I'm not just saying that as an Astros announcer. Just go to Fangraphs and look at their percentage chances of making the playoffs, and it's a lot higher than a lot of teams with a better record right now in the American League.
Yeah, they're ahead of the pace of the Tombstone Astros, too, so there is that. They are ahead of that pace. But, yeah, it's a team that has too much talent, TK. TK, we appreciate the time, as always. Hope you call a winner tonight in a series win, too.
Yeah, that'd be fun. And it should be fun night here in Detroit. It's a nice night, and the Tigers are breaking out their new City Connect unis tonight and tomorrow, so it'll be a whole different look than what you've been used to watching Tigers baseball in the past.
Okay, good. I look forward
to
it. And yeah. Maybe Blum can get in, Hinch's ear a little bit too to help out the local nine. Have a good call, TK.
All right, guys. Talk to you next weekend.
Todd Kalas, the voice of the Astros on the Shin. Our conversation presented by Texas Star Grill Shop and Gulf Coast Chevy, Buick, GMC, and Angleton. Start shopping for your new vehicle at LanceZCars.com. When we come back on the Killer Bees, would you rather have Robert Woods or this guy? Or this guy? 713-780-3776. Killer Bees, ESPN 97.5, ESPN 92.5.
Hey, before we go to the break, a word from a good friend, Doc Linville. Doc Linville is a game changer because, quite frankly, Doc Linville has a variety of different ways that he can either get your hair back or he can get your hair to look better, be stronger and thicker, and give you more results on a daily basis as it results in better coverage and a better overall look and feel. That's because of this, all the different ways he can help you. First, there's PRP. And you've heard PRP used in sports a lot in terms of platelet-rich therapy, in terms of getting the stimulation and the growth back in, whether it's the joints and your knees and your elbows, or in this case, your hair. They do PRP treatment. It's way cheaper than the NeoGraft procedure. But if you have hair that's there, it just needs to have an extra kick in the shorts, so to speak, and kind of get stronger and have a better appearance. PRP could be your first option. If that's not an option, if you've already gone bald or your thinning is way too far gone, Doc will tell you, and he'll tell you the NeoGraft procedure is a game changer. I'll tell you it too, because he told me about it. I got on board with it, and boy, am I glad I did the procedure, because the NeoGraft changed my life by getting my hairline back in front. And you can do the same thing. Go to 975hair.com right now, because when you do, you can set up a free appointment with Doc Linville's staff, and you can ask questions, get answers, and figure out all the different information about the NeoGraft procedure to see if it's right for you. You don't have to spend a single dollar out of pocket, sign on the dotted line, or make any commitments. You just get the information. It normally costs $150 for anybody off the street. You listen to us, you go to him, you go to 975hair.com, you get the consultation for free. I encourage you to do it and see if it's right for you. It was right for me, and it was a game changer for me, as I said, because what he told me that I didn't know, 95 to 99% of the follicles he's going to move from the sides and the back of your head to where you need it most, it's going to stay, grow, be with you for the long haul, probably to the day you die. Why? Because the hair on the sides and the back of your head never go away. No matter how bald you go other places, genetically, you're never going to lose the hair on the sides and the back of your head. I didn't know that till Doc told me that. And that actually was another way that they convinced me to do the procedure. Check it out today. See if it's right for you. But just get the information. What do you have to lose? Absolutely nothing. 975hair.com.
ESPN. 97.5. You're locked in with the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
3780 from the guy who thought Andrés Giménez might get plunked for delaying the double play at second. You won't be surprised when Singleton gets put on his wallet for his bat flips, will you? I didn't think that Giménez might get plunked. Well, maybe might, but I didn't say he should get plunked. I just thought it was a little bush league for him dancing around second base before he stepped on the bag. But no, I wouldn't be surprised if Singleton gets hit. I wouldn't be surprised if somebody took exception to him bat flipping. Absolutely not. People have taken exception in baseball to way less.
Oh, absolutely. But I think that this is a new series now. I think you got to he's got to do one against Detroit before.
You got to hurt somebody's feelings. He's not going to. I mean, Detroit's not going to plunk him for what he did to Marcus Stroman.
Right.
That's silly. Yeah, but I don't think Giménez deserved to be plunked. I just didn't really love his antics dancing around second base on that double play that ended the game against the Astros last week.
It was a little bush league.
Last week. He was dancing around. I didn't love the dancing. It was a peacock move. Now, I don't mind that he did it. Like, I'm cool with players peacocking and showboating. Now, I'm going to call it when I see it, and if they get hit for doing that, you can understand why. I'm not anti-fun. I'm okay with a little taunting and a little bit of showboating, but when I notice it, I'm going to say that I noticed it. Anyways, Texans receivers, they traded for a Ben Skoronek yesterday. Did that move the needle for you, the late-round pick swap for Ben Skoronek?
I was a little surprised. I said it to Brian when they did it. I was a little bit surprised that they made a move for another wide receiver, but I think he's been decent. I mean, he's a solid role player. I think that it's interesting to see if he can be a contributor on this team and if he can beat out some guys that I think he might have to beat out in this wide receiver room. But I like it. I like the fact that they're not really giving up much, and the fact is they get another guy that's played NFL football and been pretty solid to possibly contribute to that wide receiver room. So I like the fact that they're not done. They're still trying. They got pieces moving, and they're still trying to get guys in here that are veterans, that have ability, that might be able to help this team.
Yeah, it's a very crowded wide receiver room now. Whenever you add them now. I wasn't that familiar with his game. I had a few people on Twitter, and I was reading up more about him. He has the ability to play a little bit of fullback. Mm-hmm. Now, is it enough to be the starting fullback and push Andrew Beck for his job? Like, I don't know. They were talking about how good of a special teams player he is. Like, he was a special teams captain with the Rams. So you add that. Now, you already go six deep at receiver, maybe even seven if you want to include Mims, who returned some kicks last year. I think he's probably more of a practice squad guy, but you did re-sign him. You did bring him back.
Yeah.
Like, you got Diggs, Collins, Tank, Woods, Hutchinson, Mechie, Mims, and now Skowronek. So that's eight guys. Now, Sims, maybe you practice squad him if there's not an injury. You know, we've talked about Woods potentially being a cut casualty. Maybe Hutchinson's job's not safe. Maybe Beck's job's not safe here. Maybe he can be the fullback. He's not using a fullback a ton. Maybe he can be the fullback for 5 to 7 plays. He gives you some positional flexibility, a receiver, and then he's on every single special teams package. So possible there.
I don't see the. I've heard this talk about Ben Skowronek and his ability to play fullback, and maybe this is something the Texans could get creative with. And maybe use him as a non-traditional fullback, but he's 30 pounds lighter.
Yeah.
than Andrew Beck. So I don't see the idea that this guy is going to be a fullback. He's a wide receiver, and he's a wide receiver that was phased out of Sean McVay's offense last year. He was barely used on offense. Now, he did have a decent season as a bit role player 2 years ago, and I'd rather have him on the field than maybe, say, Xavier Hutchinson. So there might be a role for him on this team, but I am completely out on the idea that you're going to bring him in and him be a fullback when he's 30 pounds lighter than Andrew Beck.
I'm with you. The first time I heard fullback in the equation was John and Lance were kicking it around, and they're like, oh, he could play fullback. Wait a minute. Is this not the same guy I'm thinking of with the long blonde hair that can play in the slot?
Yeah, he's a wide
might
receiver.
Be able to
he's
run
not a
the
fullback.
Run the you know the sweep around the edge or something like that. But I don't see him as a fullback at all. That's why I was shocked. I'm like, special teams, yes. Versatility and a veteran in the room, yes. Fullback to me, I just don't see it. And I certainly don't see him beating out Beck.
We'll see. I hope that it happens now so we can play back the last 3 minutes, because it would be fabulous with how hard of a stance y'all took against it. There's film of him where he's pretty good at blocking. Now, I saw like 3 snaps of him. I haven't went back and seen every single one of his fullback snaps, so I'm not going to have an amazing
pushback. So they posted the good blocks, not the
bad blocks? Yeah, that's what highlights are.
Yeah, I know. That's my point.
Yeah, that's what highlights are. But it's not like Andrew Beck was a huge focal point of the offense. Now, he probably played more offensive snaps than like we would think. Like, you go to the games last year – in the playoffs, he played 5 offensive snaps against Baltimore. Now, you were behind in that entire game. So, like, could you get away with using Skowronek as a fullback for 5 plays? Yeah, probably. But whenever they were in games and they weren't trailing, you had 17 against Cleveland, 15 against Indy in the final game of the regular season. He missed week 16 or week 17. 13 snaps, 16 snaps, 15 snaps. So it's not like the Texans used fullback a whole lot. They probably used a fullback 25 to 30% of their offensive plays last year, just looking at Beck's snap chart.
Yeah, I like Beck on this. I think as a lead blocker, as a guy that can pick up blocks, that can give you some versatility. He's obviously speedier than I thought he was when he returned the kick for the touchdown. He's a good athlete. He's a big physical presence. He has a role on this team. I'm fine with it. I think, to B-Mac's point, my thing is, okay, you got Skowronek on your team. Now, can he beat someone out? Can he beat Hutchinson out? If Mechie hasn't kind of gotten back to where he was, like we're hoping for and CJ has kind of talked about a little bit, then is there a role for him to be better than those guys? Can he get all the way up to Noah Brown? And he also adds depth in the room, because you never know when and if injuries are going to happen. So at least going into camp, he's an extra receiver that has a chance to do something to make this team. But I'm not counting on him to kind of supplant the first 4. The interesting thing to me is, and we've kind of kicked this around several times, but evidently Robert Woods is just going to be on this team, and he is going to be one of the guys. To me, there were, you know, he, Could he be better than Robert Woods? It depends on if his position versatility gives you special teams and other options to do other things offensively with Slowick and special teams. But other than that, is he at a better point in his career than Robert Woods is? That's where I think the true question is.
I think that he would have a spot on this roster before Woods would.
Skoranek would?
I believe so. I didn't even mention Noah Brown. Like, Noah Brown is in the mix here, too.
Yep.
Yeah, because I think Woods is behind. Woods is your, at best, fifth receiver right now.
Right.
Because you have Diggs, you have Collins, you have Tank, and you have Noah Brown. So Woods is fifth behind them. So, like, what is he giving you as a fifth receiver? He's not playing special teams at all. Whereas if Skoranek's playing at least special teams, okay, like, well, he's probably going to have a roster spot before Robert Woods did. Now, you don't have to make that move on May 10th. Like, Texans Twitter was ready to make the move already. No, why would you do that? Wait until camp's over. Wait until you have to trim your roster down to 53. You don't know if you're going to be able to escape camp without injuries, escape preseason without these injuries. So there's no need to cut Robert Woods right now,
right,
unless you're trying to get something else done. So it makes sense to carry Woods to camp and into camp. And then if you escape the injury bug the entire preseason and you get to cut down day and they're all available, then that's probably the day that you're going to cut Robert Woods.
In your opinion, is Skoranek more valuable playing his role on special teams than Woods, who can play special teams as a return guy? They used him there last season.
They used Woods as a return guy? I don't even remember that.
Yeah, he was back there for punts and kicks? Punts for sure.
No, I don't think so. No, because, I mean, you have other guys who have the ability of doing that. Tank, I'm tired. I'm done with Tank as a returner. But
yeah,
you also signed Mims. There was, Ward played, not Ward, King. King was able to return some kicks and punts, too. So you have plenty of other guys where you don't need Woods to do that.
Yeah, I don't. First thing I was going to say is I don't want Tank returning. He's too valuable. I don't want him returning at punts. But at the same time, you're right. King was a guy that they went to that has done it in the past that you could get something from, too. I was just curious because of the fact that Woods could play special teams, but he's also well past his prime to where he's not going to be a threat in the return game either. And Skoranek at least could be more physical and get down, make tackles, make plays. I just was curious if it came down to something like that between those two guys.
No, I don't think it's that. I don't think it matters that much. Woods returned 7 punts last year for 42 yards. And, like, again, like, a punt return guy in this day and age with the punters being so good, they're usually going to call for a fair catch more times than not. Like, and they're not – I mean, I wouldn't say Robert Woods is electric in the punt return game either. Like, he's a guy that you're putting back there that has safe hands. If I remember right, this was early in the season where Tank Dell was the guy that they used, like, on the long punts with a chance to return, and then Robert Woods was your safe guy, your safe punt returner that they would use when they had a short field and they were trying to pin the Texans back deep, and they trusted his hands more. If you have a guy returning 7 punts on the entire season, like, that's not valuable enough to, like, that's the only reason that he's on the roster. So if I had the, wide receiver depth chart and we're eliminating the idea that Skoranek could play fullback, I would have Skoranek ahead of Robert Woods. And, I mean, they traded for him, Like, mm-hmm. they valued him. He could have hit he was on waivers, or he was going to be on waivers. And the Texans said, hey, let's do this late-round pick swap. That way he doesn't enter waivers because we want him. We want him on our football team. Mm-hmm. So I would have Skoranek ahead of Robert Woods. We saw another free agent acquisition in, last couple of days. Tyler Boyd signed with the Titans for 4.5. Would you rather have Woods at 5 or Boyd at 4.5?
Yeah, when I saw this, that's the first thing that popped into my head was I was already done with Robert Woods. If they cut him, I didn't lose any sleep over it. He was decent last year. He was better than I thought he was going to be. But I think Tyler Boyd's got more left in the tank. I think Tyler Boyd he can still be versatile. I think he still has speed. He plays inside. We remember that he dropped a surefire touchdown late in the Bengals game when they were driving to try and beat the Texans. But he was a good receiver for Cincinnati. And he's $500,000 cheaper than Robert Woods' contract that he signed 1 year for 4.5 with Tennessee. I would rather have Tyler Boyd than I would to Robert Woods. Now, the Skoranek thing kind of, obviously, and he signed already too, but the Skoranek thing basically tells you they were open to another receiver. They just went and found their guy with the trade that they made, as opposed to, I wonder if they were considering a guy like Tyler Boyd.
I don't think so. Woods' cap number is $9.7 million. They would save $5 million if they cut him. So basically, if you were to cut him for $5 million, and you sign Boyd 4.5, you'd, like, it's a net of $500,000, and you have you have Boyd on your team instead of Robert Woods? Personally, for me, the answer is no. Robert Woods was with the Texans last year, so he knows the scheme. He knows the offense. I think that they're very similar players. If I'm a fantasy football team, I'd probably go Boyd over Woods. Mm-hmm. But Woods knows the system. Like, everything I've heard about Woods in the locker room is that he's very well respected. So those secondary reasons are the reason that I would go Woods and not Boyd, because neither guy you're really expecting to be on the field a whole lot.
Okay. B-Mac, you any difference in opinion?
Tyler Boyd versus Robert Woods. I think it's fairly negligible, but I would lean to the side of Tyler Boyd. I think Robert Woods has a kind of underneath, to use a fantasy term, a PPR type role in this team. But I don't know, with all the other options you have, and Dalton Schultz can kind of do that same thing for you. You would hope that guys like Xavier Hutchinson and John Metchie also evolve to be able to do that role for you. I don't think he's really needed. I would have rather had Tyler Boyd.
I kind of lean that way as well. I thought he had more left in the tank, and I thought he actually could have worked his way into, whether Noah Brown or someone gets hurt, or the fact that I just think with his ability still that he could have been a decent piece in this puzzle for this next season.
713-780-ESPN. Let's play Who Said It. Everybody's favorite game. Brian's going to read to us quotes that were said by ESPN 97.5 personalities, and we guess who said it. It's the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
ESPN 97.5. It's now time for super producer Brian McDonald, a.k.a. Tremac.
I'm Groot.
To do his best to stump Joel and Jeremy.
Well, I'm stumped.
It's everyone's favorite segment.
Because everyone loves it.
Yeah, everyone loves it.
I know.
Right, exactly.
Yes.
Who said it?
He said it.
With the Killer Bees.
This texter says that he, Skoranek, maybe he can block instead of Tank Dell on the goal line. Great idea. That is a wonderful idea.
Anybody but Tank.
I love where your mind's at on that one, 2834. That's a great call. All right, let's get to Who Said It. Brian's going to read to us five quotes that were said by ESPN 97.5 personalities, and the Blankers, I guess, who said it. Last week, we dominated. Let's see if we can continue.
Yeah, all right. So one quick note before we get started. Normally, I wouldn't use Dell when he's in a producer role, but since Lance was out, this week, Dell is eligible because he was co-hosting.
Yeah.
Eric Lopez was in,
so is John McClain.
I didn't say John McClain was eligible. I just said Dell.
Because he said he was co-hosting, which he really technically wasn't. He was still producing.
Well, he did co-host the day there at Klein's. He was on site as a co-host because Austin was in studio.
One day.
Still a co-host. All right, but it's the same voice. It's ESPN full-time employees. Anyway, quote number one. Maybe someone needs to just sucker punch Alex Bregman in the face. Again, I'm sarcastically suggesting this, but like something needs to liven these guys up. Something has to happen in that clubhouse to get these people alive again.
It sounds Paul-y.
It's either Paul or Lance, I think.
I was going to say, I think I vaguely remember hearing this, which would mean it would have to be in those two shows.
Okay, so that doesn't help to eliminate one of them.
Nope. No, Jeremy. It does help completely because of the other scenario. Lance was out all week.
Oh, yeah. No, he was there Monday. He was there Monday.
No, he wasn't. Dell filled in Monday.
No, I think he was there Monday.
Lance was there Monday.
Oh, he was? Oh, I thought he was out all week. Okay.
So you can still use Lance, though.
Yeah. I think it really sounds like Paul.
This is adding another character, really. Like, I know you're multiplying Dell. Move the goalpost after you
league.
Go four,
really
four and one.
Yeah.
You think it's you say it sounds like Paul to you?
That's the first inclination I had when I heard it.
Well, you're right more than I am. So let's start with you. Let's see if you're hot today. You want to go with it?
Sure.
All right, Paul.
Maybe someone needs to just sucker punch Alex Bregman.
Right. Good start.
Sarcastically suggesting this.
The home run in the first.
Something needs to liven these guys up.
Hopefully it's a Jordan homer.
Yes.
So we got that one right. That was Paul.
Got that one right. Yep. All right, you're up 1-0. Here we go. Question number two, or quote number two. What do squirrels actually do for our ecosystem? Bees, I get it. They say if bees were to disappear, we'd all die, I guess. What about squirrels? What would squirrels do?
News of the weird.
Hold on. Say this again.
What do squirrels actually do for our ecosystem? Bees. I get it. They say if bees were to disappear, we'd all die, I guess. But what about squirrels? What would squirrels do?
It's the killer bees in high regard, whoever said this. Because what would you do in an ecosystem of sports radio in Houston without the bees? We have seen some squirrels leave this town many times. Who are the squirrels that have worked in sports radio?
Is a weasel a squirrel?
I think there's some similarities.
Yeah,
I think
it's a rodent family.
I think some squirrels do some weaselly things, and I think some weasels do some squirrely things.
Fair.
So I eliminate some people because of the language here. Like, I can eliminate some people because of ecosystem.
Can we think that it is the topic just it came up on it organically, or was it news of the weird?
It's probably news of the weird.
Okay.
I kind of want to lean Lance.
See, the tricky thing is he's in the mix for one day, as well as Dell on two shows.
Yeah, it does make it a little wrench in the options.
Yeah, I don't like it. Could you see Joe or Paul saying it?
Not. I could see Paul. I couldn't see Joe saying this. No.
Okay.
No. Use some words I don't see Joe using.
What ecosystem?
Correct.
Yeah. Love you, Joe.
I thought you were just going to say because of the logic that went into it.
I think it's... I mean, what are you feeling?
I don't really have a feel.
You nailed the first
Dell,
one.
Dell, maybe? Would you consider Dell?
Yeah. Yeah, I could consider Dell. I think it'd be Dell or Lance.
Okay. Just percentages of how many shows Dell was on versus how many shows Lance was on.
Okay.
Does that count? Should that matter?
I don't know. See, I think Brian could also, like, play the gamesmanship there. Lance is still an option, right?
Yes, right.
Lance was on the show Monday.
I think it's Lance.
Okay. We can roll with it.
Let's try Lance.
Lance.
What do squirrels actually do for our ecosystem?
Good
ecosystem.
One.
Bees, I get it. They say if bees were to disappear, we'd all die, I guess.
See, Lance is a big fan of our show, so I knew that he would be a proponent of the bees. Mm-hmm. And just like just the words there. The words to me was Lance. All right, good start. 2-0.
All right, here we go. Quote number 3. Your 4 most important players of your future are all the same age. So, like, when they go hang out, who do you think they're going to the bars with? Michael Penix? Or the guy with 4 kids? Like, even in the locker room, they're going to be Team Penix. This is going to be a colossal disaster.
Wow.
Yeah, I think this could be John, Dell, Joe, Paul.
Yep, I agree.
I think it could be any 4 of them. Colossal disaster. Colossal is kind of a Paul word, but maybe Joe.
You couldn't see Lance back-to-back?
Nah, I think he got his Lance out of the way. I think Lance is only going to be once this week.
Or because we... Okay, just think about how he thinks about things.
Yeah, that's just my read, though, and okay. I'm confident on it. So, like, I really do want to die on that hill.
Okay. One more time, Brian.
Sure. Your 4 most important players of your future are all the same age. So, like, when they go to hang out, who do you think they're going to the bars with? Michael Penix or the guy with 4 kids? Like, even in the locker room, they're going to be Team Penix. This is going to be a colossal disaster.
After hearing that, I could see Dell saying.
See, that second time to me sounded more Paul, but I could see, like, is Dell saying colossal?
I think so.
Colossal's
I agree,
like,
with you that Paul would say it.
Colossal's a very, like, private school word, I feel like.
Okay. So is it between those two? Could you see Granato saying?
Not really. I could see Colossal. No, I don't really think Joe. I could see Joe saying it too, though.
Joe saying Colossal?
Yeah, I could see him say Colossal. Like, this is going to be a colossal mistake. I could see Joe kind of. Yeah, I could see. To me, it's one of those 3. Joe, Dell, Paul.
Okay. I felt like the second time I heard it, I felt like it was Dell, but I don't have a strong read on it.
Okay, call it. I don't have a good read on it either.
No, Brian, one more time, please, quickly.
Quickly, we're already at 44.
Oh, shut it.
You really want it one more time?
Yes.
All right. Your 4 most important players of your future are all the same age. So, like, when they go hang out, who do you think they're going to the bars with? Michael Penix or the guy with four kids? Like, even in the locker room, they're going to be Team Penix. This is going to be a colossal disaster.
You have no strong feeling, Jeremy? I think it's either Paul or Dell.
I would lean Paul.
Okay, Paul.
Your four most important players in the future are all the same age.
Okay. Colossal's
so, like,
a Joe
when they go to hang out, who do you think they're going to the bars with? Michael Penix or the guy with four kids?
Yeah, that's a Joe word. I should have gotten that one. Eh.
I thought you guys were going to catch all the times he said like in the quote.
Kirk Cousins is in a great period in his life because he has four kids, and I hope one of them's at least three.
All right, quote four.
Well, hopefully Kirk Cousins has a gym membership. Then it'd be a really important time in his life. All right, quote number four. You guys are up 2-1.
Yeah.
He's got to go. Hunter Brown's got to go. I can't watch cosplay JV anymore. I can't. I can't have both of them stinking, but Hunter Brown pretending to be JV, I don't want to see it anymore.
Cosplay. This is either Dell or John. Kind of lean Dell.
Yeah, I kind of think it's Dell.
All right, let's do it. Dell.
He's got to go. Hunter Brown's got to go. I can't watch cosplay JV anymore. I can't. I can't have both of them stinking, but Hunter Brown pretending to be JV, I don't want to see it anymore.
All right, number five.
I'll just take the win.
By the way, that was Dell as co-host, so the one you complained about.
Yeah,
right.
I could hear Granato snickering. I could tell that was when he was co-hosting.
All right, quote number five. Keep asking me about a guy I didn't even want to sign. That would be me, like, I'd say, like, 50. F me? Why do you say F me for? I didn't want to bring you here. I wasn't even a part of that.
Is this Joe? Who didn't want to Bray you here?
Where's the F me coming in?
Oh, that could be Paul. That's a very Paul thing to say.
Okay, so that makes sense. That it would be Joe.
And then, well...
I don't think Sean would say...
Well, Sean's not a... No, Sean's not an option.
This is one
voice.
No, but
I'm saying baiting Dell by saying F you, and then Dell saying F
no,
me.
No, this is one voice.
I get it. I'm saying he could be... That one voice could have been reacting to what was said to him.
Or they're just saying that about their take.
Okay.
Do you need it again?
Yeah, one more time.
Keep asking me about a guy I didn't even want to sign? That would be me, like... I'd be like 50. F me? Why do you say F me for? I didn't want to bring you here. I wasn't even a part of that.
I'm going to lean Paul here. I think it's from that show, but I'm leaning Paul. Paul can be like a contrarian at times. So if like everybody was saying yay Abreu, he might have been saying nay Abreu. And then that, you know, F me, I think is more of a Paul thing. I think Paul is likely to say that.
Was Granato on the Abreu hill?
I can't remember. I think that he would be. I think he would have been fine by that.
I think he would have been good with it. Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, we won already. That's fine.
I think it's Paul.
Go, Paul. Keep asking me about a guy I didn't even want to sign. That would be me. I'd be like 50. F me? What do you say F me for? I didn't want to bring you here. I wasn't even a part of that.
I wonder why you didn't want to bring you here.
He's not a real big baseball guy, is he?
He might have just not had a take on it yet.
It didn't matter because you guys had already won, but the context is they're talking about as if he's Dana Brown. This is not Dell giving his own opinion. He's acting like as if he's Dana Brown.
Makes sense.
That does make sense. Yep.
That makes sense. Okay, well, we won. That's what? How many weeks in a row? It's a lot of 65. Weeks in a row.
I believe 74.
Well, I think
we've won every week this year. All right, which combo do you like more for the Texans? Do you like Lassiter outside and either King Bryant at nickel or Lassiter inside and either Okuda or Henderson outside? 713-780-ESPN, HRP listener line, 713-780-3776, B's on ESPN 97.5, ESPN 92.5.
ESPN 97.5. Live in the Veritex Community Bank Studios, it's the Killer Bees. Now back to Joel and Jeremy.
He's Blank, I'm Branham. It's the Bees on ESPN 97.5, ESPN at 92.5. 713-780-ESPN, 713-780-3776. Bees, can y'all roast Joseph for his Colin Cowherd commentary? He proceeds to tell us he doesn't see a problem wearing a backwards hat. Does he know there's no such thing as a backwards hat? You can wear a hat backwards, though.
Wow.
Honey,
that was deep.
Okay. It feels like a very odd nitpick.
Yeah, no doubt. But that's Sonny Glaze Branham.
That's an odd nitpick. Kamari Lassiter, rookies are doing their thing. Young players are, like, practicing on the football field. You have young football players on a football field doing football things as people who want to talk about football watch them do those football things. But Kamari Lassiter, he was asked today about, you know, it was actually Cole Thompson. He said, like, D'Amico's from Alabama, and then Lassiter, like, stopped in his tracks and didn't realize that D'Amico Ryans was from Alabama. Does that surprise you?
A little bit. Yeah.
It like, I started to wonder if, like, I'm an old fart where, like, okay.
That's
like
my
some
job.
Of these. Yeah, that's true. But, like, some of these players, like, that we automatically know where they went to school, and it also helps that D'Amico played here and coached here, so we know his history and his background. But I was taken aback about Lassiter not knowing where D'Amico Ryans went to college, and I was wondering, is this a Branham problem for thinking that, or is this a Lassiter problem for not knowing? And I really don't know the answer to that.
I mean, D'Amico's last year at Alabama was 2005. How old is Lassiter in 2005? I mean, it's 19 years
born.
Ago.
He might have been born. But it's more about knowing the history of the game and, like, following
but
it.
D'Amico's not a Hall of Famer, though.
No, but he's an NFL head coach, and he's one of 32, and NFL head coaches get talked about a lot. And, like, he got drafted by him a few weeks ago.
Yeah, but I don't know. Like, how many coaches do we know where they went to college other than the coach of your team? I don't for a guy who was maybe one or not even born when D'Amico finished college, I think he knows D'Amico as a coach. He could probably tell you where D'Amico's coached, but his college film is so far.
Sure, but he got drafted by him 3 weeks ago.
And not only that, think about
you got to go to his football reference page to see where he went to school.
I would have done that.
Think about last year's draft.
No, I wouldn't. I wouldn't care.
Last year's draft between Will Anderson and the quarterback decision to be made between an Alabama quarterback and C.J. Stroud, there was a lot of talk about D'Amico and his Alabama roots, and would that factor in, and did it factor in Will Anderson, and could it factor in with the quarterback decision? I think that got some run during draft season for sure. I do think in this case, I think people that are more than casual knew D'Amico Ryans went to Alabama. Maybe I'm wrong, too.
Look, I'm not saying that Lassiter should know that. In fact, I said I'm not sure if I'm the one that's the idiot here. So, like, I know that it's kind of 50-50. And it's not that Lassiter, like, would have watched D'Amico play. Like, right. I'm with you on that. It's more like you were drafted by the guy a couple of weeks ago. I would have done some intel. I would have done some recon. Or somebody like, hey, you know your coach is from Bama. You know, he has all these friends and family who, you know that Lassiter was a Georgia Bulldog. Hey, man, you got drafted by that guy that went to Alabama. You know? Like, well, I was a little surprised he didn't know it. That's all I'm saying.
I don't know for sure they brought Lassiter in for one of their 30-whatever interviews. Uh-huh. But if they did, you would think that's an icebreaker, if nothing else, about SEC football. And, you know, you guys did this versus us that did that. And then there's the back and forth that kind of, even if he didn't know, figures out pretty quickly D'Amico went to Alabama.
Yeah. Yeah. I was a little surprised, and I started to wonder if maybe, you know, I was the one that was wrong for being surprised. Anyways, what scenario do you think is better for the Texans this year? Because we talk about Lassiter, and we talk about, like, is he better suited as an inside guy? Is he better suited as an outside guy and, you know, his skill set and all of that? But we don't talk about the other side of the equation, right? We don't talk about the second part of that. Because if he's playing inside, that means somebody else has to play outside. If he's playing outside, somebody else has to play inside. So we should be looking at the combo of what's going to be on the football field, not where is Lassiter's best position. So if Lassiter plays outside corner, you're looking at a nickel of Desmond King or Miles Bryant, who they signed from New England. And I actually think that they think higher of Bryant than they do King, because they cut King and they signed Bryant. Or do you like the pairing of Lassiter inside and either Jeff Okudah or C.J. Henderson outside? Which duo is better?
Well, I've gone back and forth on this. I really like the big picture long term of Lassiter being the other corner opposite of Stingley. But I think this year, his first year, the schedule, the fact that they're in go-for-it mode, I'm going to say that he's going to be okay inside, and I'll lean for this year taking the best of Okudah or Henderson, or maybe there's another option somewhere with cutdowns and other things that happen if those two guys don't work out. But I'll take a veteran on the outside and have Lassiter play inside for this season.
Okay. I think it's very close. Like, for what it's worth, like, this isn't one of those I'm 100% left, 0% right. Like, I'm pretty close to 50-50 on this. My slight lean is I'd rather Desmond King, Miles Bryant be on the football field than Jeff Okuda, CJ Henderson. And, like, this is the stuff you're going to have to figure out in training camp. Like, this is going to be not only a battle of position, but a battle of who goes where. But I like Desmond King, Miles Bryant, whoever wins that job at nickel, more than I like the idea of a couple of first-round busts or Okuda being a first-round bust playing the outside. That's a slight lean. It's a slight lean because maybe that changes with D'Amico Ryan's defense. Maybe they saw Jeff Okuda's really good in his own defense. Texans like to play zone defense. Maybe D'Amico Ryan's can bring the most out of one of those players because D'Amico Ryan's is a defensive guru that brings the most out of those players. So this is certainly fluid. But if I had to make the call right now, I like the slot guys more than I like the outside guys.
Brian, you got a take?
I think I would base my opinion upon where you think Lassiter plays best and not worry about what that means for the rest of the position. Well, that sort of mindset is what ends up putting Titus Howard at left guard. Like, we know he's not a good left guard, but you do it because you think, well, we got other guys who could play tackle versus what we have at guard, and then you got a guy, Titus Howard, who doesn't play well at guard. If Lassiter, and I'm going with what Lance has said about this, he clearly sees Lassiter as an inside corner, as a nickel corner. He talks about his, you know, short area quickness, his tackling, his tough run defense. If he's a nickel corner, I want to play him at his best position, especially in his rookie year where his head's going to be swimming. He's still trying to learn the NFL. I don't want to play him in a place where he's not best suited for. I'll deal with the rest later, but I would play him wherever he's best suited.
I hate the idea of making decisions based on a player and not based on what's the best for the team. This is very Alex Bregman should bat fourth.
But isn't playing the player where he's best suited what's best for the team? Because you're going to get the most out of him?
It depends on the value of outside corner and inside corner. It depends on the trade-off there.
I don't think he's best suited for his entire career inside at nickel. I think for this year, because the chances of getting beat, get beat deep, really get cooked outside as opposed to him playing more inside, and because he has a nose for the football and he can hit, and I think that he can cover inside right now, regardless of what he's learning to do and where he ends up long term. That's why I went with the decision. Plus, you're playing a lot of really good teams with a lot of really good quarterbacks, and they're going to pick on him on the outside more so, I think, than on the inside.
But, okay, I'm not dismissing any of that. But shouldn't you make the decision based on what is the best interest of the team, not the best interest of the player?
But that's what I'm saying. I think for those reasons, it's the best interest of the team this year he plays inside.
Okay, that's fine. Like, Brian's argument was more that, like, it protects Lassiter more, and this is a chance to let him to excel and to let him shine. Because, okay, like, I'll concede to you. Let's just grade them, like, 1 to 10. Let's say Lassiter at nickel is a 7, and let's say that Lassiter outside is a 6. But the nickel corners are an 8. The other outside corners are a 4. You might be playing Lassiter at his worst position of the two, but the overall combination of the two is higher if Lassiter's outside, if you think that the inside guys are better than the outside guys outside of Lassiter.
Using your grading system, I would agree with you, but I don't know, at least upon what I've read from Lance, and again, I'm not a scout. I don't know exactly where Lassiter's full strengths will be, you know, 5 years from now in his NFL career. But it doesn't seem like the gap is that close, and that'll be something we'll have to see play out over training camp and in the preseason games. But if the gap is as close as you make it out to be, like a 7 one place, a 6 another, then sure. But if the gap is wider, then I'd rather get the most out of that player and then do what you have to do, and we'll have to see how Okuda does, but do something to improve the other spot versus play two guys out of position and then making both worse.
That's where it's going to be fun. Like, that's one of the more intriguing, I think, questions of training camp is let's see what that looks like. Because I agree with you, we don't know. Like, with that, a lot of that is unknown, and we're basing it based on, like, you know, some of the Georgia games we've watched based on things that we've read. But to me, that's one of the more intriguing questions of training camp, like in rookie camp, whatever. But once you get to training camp, like, is Lassiter playing inside? Is he playing outside? How do these other corners that don't, you know, that aren't Kamari Lassiter, how are they looking? Is outside a better position than inside, like in terms of depth on this team? That is stuff that we're going to have to watch in camp. But, yeah, I'll be intrigued by that. All right, let's give away some Greek Fest tickets. Tuesday, or coming up next week, rather, May 16th through 18th. You can go any day. We're giving away a pair of tickets here. You can go any day, May 16th through 18th. The first person that calls in right now, calling in, 713-780-3776, and tells Brian who was the only host that was used twice on Who Said It this week. Which ESPN 97.5 host was used twice on Who Said It? First person to call, 713-780-3776. You're going to Greek Fest coming up May 16th through May 18th. Are the Astros on the verge of a turnaround? It's the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5, ESPN 92.5.
ESPN 97.5. Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3-bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort-style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
Lowe's knows that more projects mean more tools. For a limited time, new and existing MyLowe's Rewards credit card members can get 12-month special financing on purchases of $299 or more, in-store and online. Don't wait to get the things you need. Get special financing today. Lowe's. We help. You save. Now through August 27th, choose 12-month special financing on purchases of $299 or more. Offer subject to credit approval and cannot be combined. Minimum monthly payments required. See store or Lowe's.com for details.